Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Right now, we are going to go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and bring in Dustin Dupariak. He is from the Indianapolis Star, and he's the Pacers beat reporter. Indianapolis is not easy for me to say. Dustin, thank you. How are you? How are you?
Doing well. Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So we're excited for this series. This should be great. Just on the surface, when you saw, hey, these two teams are playing, this is where we're going, what went through your mind?
It was fitting, I guess, in general. I mean, obviously, I kind of figured that this is kind of how the season was going to go for the Pacers. They were ultimately going to have a better year regular season-wise than last year, but start in a more difficult position. They were going to be looking at they would be able to move up to a four and be facing a one seed in the semifinals rather than in the first round. That was going to be a tougher road to hoe. And obviously, you know, Cleveland, I mean, the Cavs just were remarkable this year. I mean, you kind of went into the season seeing this sort of glob of teams after Boston, think, okay, who's going to rise up after that? And I felt like it could have been anybody, and it really was Cleveland. I mean, it was a remarkable job that Kenny Atkinson did, just getting this group that was already really good to take it up a level. My thought was, well, it's going to be a really good series. And also, you know, the way the season series broke out, which is, you know, odd for Central Division opponents, you didn't really get to learn about them too much. I mean, you had those two games in January with a home and home, and those were really interesting. The last two were, you know, like obviously the Cavs were resting both of their guys. The last one, the regular season finale, was hilarious. But it was mostly played by two-way contract players who aren't even eligible for this thing. So basically, there's still like a lot of mystery in terms of how they match up and how they really work. I mean, Halliburton missed one of those games. He missed a half of another one, and that was one of the best halves the Pacers played all year. So you kind of really don't even know what to expect from it, which is, I think, a really fun thing and adds a lot of intrigue to it.
Hey, Dustin, it's Tom Withers, former AP writer. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Tom. About yourself, man?
Great to have you on here. Hey, so the Pacers, to me, have been one of the unsung stories all year. I know they started out poorly, played really well down the stretch. What were the early season issues that they were dealing with, and what finally clicked in for them?
Yeah, two big things. One was Tyrese Halliburton had a horrendous first 15 games. He just could not buy, you know, just could not make a shot. I think over that stretch, he averaged like 15 a game, somehow got some buckets, but I mean, I think it was 37.5% from the floor, 28.4 from three. I've read those numbers like 100 times now. So he just could not buy one. And you saw really just the joy just drained from him. I remember even he had a good second shooting half against Milwaukee in Milwaukee. But I mean, we you know, just talked to him in the locker room afterwards, and you just saw a different guy than you're used to seeing. And he came back the next game, and I think he had like 21 after that. And I think he had like 28 the next game, and he came in and talked to us after. He was just like, I'm just not going to be like that anymore. Okay. Like I'm done with that. I'm finding a way to move on from that. You saw just a switch, you know, flip with him. He got a lot better pretty fast. I mean, he still had some not great games. There was some inconsistency there, but from the All-Star break on, he was pretty much phenomenal. I think I just did the math. I think he's had double figure assists in 21 of his last 25 games, counting regular season and postseason. And he's been shooting it pretty well. Didn't make a lot of great of threes against Milwaukee in the playoffs, but has been a different player. But the other thing was, they dealt with injuries. So some guys that mattered, guys that are really the their connective tissue. They still had their four leading scorers available through that whole kind of November, December stretch. But Andrew Nembhard missed most of November with knee tendonitis, something he'd been doing with Wofford. They just decided to shut him down and get him back healthy. Aaron Nesmith had a bad ankle sprain. And so he was out from November 1st to January 16th. Ben Shepard strained an oblique. I think he broke some ribs against Miami, took a shot there. And, you know, all those things kind of came together. And those are three guys that are really good defenders for them, really good connective tissue, ball movers, you know, catch and shoot guys. You know, and Nembhard obviously can be a secondary ball handler for Halliburton. You know, really just, again, a lot of their connective tissue was gone, and they had to kind of make way make everything worse for them. I mean, they were starting Quentin Jackson, who was a two-way guy, as their shooting guard for like 7-8 games in that stretch. So, I mean, they really had to kind of pieced together with duct tape. They had the two centers went down with Achilles tendon tears, you know, and they couldn't really get a guy that they could trust until they could trade for Thomas Bryant on December 15th because he was a guy that signed a free agent contract in the offseason. So it took a while for them to get all those pieces together, and once they finally did, they really got going. Another big piece was, you know, they really had their schedule compacted by that Paris trip, really on both ends of it. You saw not a lot of, you know, space between games, and a big kind of turning point for them was that time they got to practice during the NBA, like where basically when they got to the knockout rounds of the NBA Cup and everybody else got a break, they needed that break like really bad. You saw a different team 5 days after. They had a horrendous game against Charlotte on December 8th, and then, you know, really I think they didn't play again until Friday, maybe Saturday, somewhere in that stretch. It was like Sunday to Friday, and they got most of a week off. And from that point on, you know, they were 40-17. You know, basically from that stretch forward. So those pieces all came together and kind of flipped those things around. But I mean, the biggest two things were Halliburton becoming Halliburton again, and those getting those three really connective, hard-playing guys back.
Dustin, can you talk a little bit about how the Pacers, like, had to kind of back off a total, you know, you're coming off last year, it's offense, mm-hmm. offense, offense, and that they had to buy into this philosophy that if we really want to go deeper and we want to win in the playoffs, we are going to have to readjust what we're doing defensively, especially towards the second half of the season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it really, the click over in terms of this has to change really came about Christmas of last season. You know, you see if you go back in their box scores and stuff, you see a significant lineup change around December 26th of 2023. And that's basically, I mean, like, up until that point, I mean, the scoring numbers were nuts. I mean, they had a game where they beat Atlanta like 157-155 in an NBA Cup game. Like, it was crazy. And they were just feeling like they could outscore everybody. And Carlisle would keep saying at press conference, we can't keep doing this, we can't keep doing this, we can't keep doing this. But they had this very, you know, offensive-oriented lineup that they were running out there. It was like, you know, Halliburton, Buddy Hield, you know, Ben Mathurin, you know, Obi Toppin and Miles Turner, I think. I mean, there was one or two. Bruce Brown was in there, too. I think it was like Halliburton, Brown, Mathurin, Toppin, and Turner. And, you know, Brown was the only guy that could really trust to defend anybody. And they also just, you know, like, Toppin's not the best defensive player in the world. They were getting just killed by power forwards. Like, the Giannis had, you know, 64 points in the game in that stretch, had 54 points in the game in that stretch. And it's like, okay, this doesn't really work. And so they moved Jalen Smith into the starting lineup at that point, and then they traded for Pascal Siakam, and it's like, okay, like, this has to get better. So you saw the numbers get better toward the second half of last season. You know, this year again, you know, basically at the beginning part of the season, with them missing Nesmith, Nembhard, and Shepard, that's their three best defenders, you know, three best perimeter defenders and guys that can defend multiple positions and stuff like that. You know, like, that right there was really killer. I mean, it wasn't that they weren't focused on it or didn't spend a lot of time thinking about defense, but the guys that were the best defensive players were gone. And so everything else, I mean, Quentin Jackson was guarding the opponent's best player. You know, again, like, two-way contract guy, not eligible to even play right now. And that's the guy they were putting on Jalen Green when they were playing Houston and stuff like that. I mean, they got beat by Toronto in a game, and you were like, well, who were they ever supposed to have defend these guys? Like, who was supposed to defend RJ Barrett out of the group they had available? I mean, they had no choice. And Turner was sick that night, so Jacob Poeltl went out for like 30. And it was like, I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's like, when they were like wounded, they had nobody to guard anybody. And so finally all those guys go back, and they don't just dial it up. They say, okay, not only are we going to play harder defense, we're going to live on full court pressure. And that, I think, was really the big, you know, the risk, frankly, is after Nembhard comes off of knee tendonitis, you're like, well, you're going to jam every ball handler 94 feet. And if your guy's not the one bringing up the ball, then Pascal will do it, or Aaron will do it, or Ben Mathurin will do it, or something like that. Basically, it's going to be required of anybody. Whoever's guy is bringing up the ball is going to have to defend him as soon as he gets the inbound, and that's the way they're going to change things. And so that's also a really big key. I mean, you see the turnovers caused numbers go up a lot starting about January 1st. I think they were maybe top five in turnovers caused. I think like seventh in steals. I could have those numbers flipped. But that's really a game changer there. But really, it was middle of last season they decided you can't just outscore everybody anymore. And, you saw it get a little bit better, but then it got a lot better this year once they got all their key defensive pieces back and then really committed to not just playing defense, but playing pressure defense.
Dustin, you had one of those non-basketball stories drop in your lap, and I can empathize and sympathize with you. The biggest story of the Pacers-Bucks series happened after the Pacers-Bucks series with the situation with John Halliburton on the floor and Giannis. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to be I like the way that Tyrese handled this in the aftermath. Obviously, had a connection with his dad, explained what had happened, kind of scolded his dad, if you will, a little bit. Do you think there's going to be any, after effect of this? Do you think this is going to be kind of done? Unfortunately, I'm afraid that it may linger with some fans in terms of him hearing it a little bit. But what are your thoughts as we go forward now?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to hear about it, but, he was already hearing himself called overrated by everybody in Milwaukee. So, there's only so much there. And I'm sure, I guess at the moment, my first glance thought is to think he'll be able to shake it off pretty easy because, you hear stuff all the time,
right?
And this is not going to be the worst thing you've ever heard. And I can't imagine him going back to the sort of mental hole he was in November. I'd have a hard time imagining that he would get that far. But they are really close. Among the lingering effects, he's already been, I don't know if the word suspended, banned, whatever. He's not coming to games for a while. And basically the term that was used was foreseeable future. I dug into that a little bit, talked to some people, and they're just thinking through the playoffs at this point. They haven't even considered next year in any, positive, negative, or otherwise, as far as how far that's going to go. And so, they're really close. John has a lot to do with Tyrese being who he is. Both as a player and as a person. They've got some similar personality traits. Tyrese is not the exact same, but a lot of just Ty's very garrulous, very personable nature comes from John. And, I got John on the phone, Wednesday, without a problem, and he probably shouldn't have picked up the phone at the end of the day. That probably wasn't the smartest thing he did, but he was, honest and real about it. He's like, I screwed up and I shouldn't have done that. He made a point of telling me, he's like, I did not swear at the guy because I don't swear, and I'm it would seem kind of wild to me because Ty will throw out the random F-bomb at a press conference for no real emotional reason, but just it just happened to be the word that popped in his head at the moment. I thought that was interesting, but I saw a picture, and I don't know if it's real because I don't know what's real on the internet anymore, but of the Cavs having shirts that say "Control Your Dad." And I have no idea if that's true.
I think that was a little fake, but he's going to hear some of that for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he will. And it's just, again, what's the difference between that and overrated? It's like he's used to hearing that stuff on the road. I'm sure he's used to that stuff. It's going to bother him just because I think he knows his dad screwed up and there's not a lot he could do to justify it. And, it's tough, I think. It's definitely tougher than it was Giannis. I think because if you're Halliburton, you're getting yourself into that fraternity of superstars, and you're proving that you belong there. And it's kind of, it's got to be weird to have an interaction between your dad and one of the best players in the world, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to ask you about that, the overrated thing for Halliburton. At the end of the day, if he is driven by that and they knock the Cavs out, he could always go back and go, well, nobody, you talk about having a chip on your shoulder. You wonder if the player saying that he was the most overrated player could be a blessing in disguise.
Oh, sure. It's going to work fine for him. I think, the telling thing about it is it was 13 out of 90. It wasn't like this is a widely held belief. Basically, it's not like this is a majority of the players that were polled or the majority of the players in the NBA. I've been in locker rooms. I used to work for The Athletic. I covered college sports there. I had to execute one of these polls, and so I've seen the guys on The Athletic, the beat writers, sort of conducting these in the locker room. They'll tell every PR department, hey, I'm coming in to do this, just so you guys are aware. And I've seen them interview Pacers guys about it, and you see how the whole thing goes. And, you know there are certain questions that the guys are like, I don't think I need to touch that one. You know, that's fine. I don't need to be calling. I mean, I know I'm anonymous, but I don't need to be calling anybody overrated. And so, I mean, I think out of the total amount of guys pulled, there was a substantial number of guys who did not answer that question. And then, it's 13 out of 90. It's like, okay, like that could be two teams of guys, you don't know basically who would say that. And it's just like, okay, like, so number one, you gotta be like, okay, like not a lot of people are lining up to answer one guy on that question at all. I mean, even if again, 90 people answered it, but like, it's not like everybody has a consensus and this is what everyone thinks. And it's like, okay, how are you even like, it depends on how you're rating Tyrese in the first place. I mean, if you think he's a top 10, if you think everybody thinks he's a top 10 player, then he would be overrated. If you think everybody thinks he's a top 20 player, then he probably isn't. You know, it just depends on how you view that. And it's a weird deal, but like, yeah, it serves as easy motivation. I mean, one of the first things he tweeted was overrate that. It didn't seem to bother him all that much when we asked him about it. You know, it was just like, hey, you know, like it is what it is. I could see how he ends up getting that distinction in the sense that like, you know, he's a max contract guy. He was an Olympic gold medalist who didn't play very much in the Olympics. And out of guys that are just going to will himself to 30 every night, like he's not necessarily that. Like you got to watch him and like closely to see what it is that makes him as valuable as he is. You got to watch a whole game to see how he changes the geometry and just how his ability to involve others makes a difference. But like, I'm sure if you're a player and you're like, well, that guy can't get past me every time, you know, and all these other guys can, and he's considered in that realm, and I think I can stop him. I could see how as a player you could come to that conclusion that he's overrated, but like you watch a game and watch all 10 pieces move, it's different. Like that's where you really see his value. So I get why somebody wouldn't see that, or why somebody might think that he thinks he's a bigger deal than he is, or he's rated as a bigger deal than he is. I guess it just depends on where you think he is technically rated as to whether he's overrated or underrated.
Sure. Dustin, I got about 60 seconds left here. Sure. The Pacers win this series if what?
They shoot the ball really, really well and cause a lot of turnovers. I think that the game they won where they were both full strength, they surprised the heck out of the Cavs. Kenny Atkinson said, I can't believe they pressured us the entire entire half. And, you know, I mean, it's probably one of Cleveland's worst offensive halves of the year. I think they shot 28% from the floor, or maybe less than that, and they just were not prepared for as much pressure as got dialed up.
Is that Rick? Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Rick didn't say it. Kenny said it about Rick.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It was Rick's call.
Because we were sitting before going, I wonder how many games Rick Carlisle is worth in this series.
He could be worth one or two. He could be worth a bit. Like, he's really good in adjustments. I mean, he's been around this thing for so long. I imagine it's funny to watch even from, like, when you're dealing with any NBA fan base because they get so, up over every single decision. And there are Pacers fans that just want to kill Rick over 100 things he does, but he'll make an adjustment that the other guy doesn't see coming, and the other coach will be like, wow, I don't think you realize how smart this guy is. So he's pretty good at that, at adjusting things. I mean, one, you know, kind of key thing I thought he did in the Bucks series was he held Miles Turner. Miles was kind of like a secondary defender on Giannis until the last game where he really just put him on Giannis and, you know, just made that the fight for the finish. And Giannis still ended up with a triple-double because Giannis is utterly incredible. That I thought made a difference, and Miles really dialed it up the last two games on both ends, I thought. And so that stuff, you know, little things like that make a difference, you know, just when they pressure, you know, defensive matchup
makes
changes,
sense. Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Totally makes sense. Dustin, thank you. We're going to be looking for your stuff too online too. We're going to check it out, Indianapolis Star. Dustin Tapera, thank you so much. Well, hopefully we'll talk to you again throughout the series.
Absolutely. Have me on anytime. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Have a great trip while you're here in Cleveland too. Thanks,
right,
Dustin.
Right, well.
You're right, well. Dustin, thank you. Appreciate it. He was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Dustin Dupirak from the Indianapolis Star. He's the Pacers beat reporter. Just joined us talking about this matchup. Sunday, it's Pacers-Cavs, and we're talking about it. But first, I want to let you know that the Browns are one of the biggest parts of the week, obviously, with the NFL draft and trading down in the first round, then drafting Shedeur Sanders. You don't want to miss Daryl Ryder and I when we talk about all of these things. Is that right? Daryl Ryder and I. Is that me?
Me and Daryl.
It would be.
I know.
Yeah, it would be me because you don't, which you would then be the subject, therefore me.
Yeah, well, so why do I feel like grammatically correct I should have said I there? Anyone?
It just sounds better.
It sounds awkward.
Yeah, I think just the way language has evolved.
Me and Daryl.
Me and Daryl.
Daryl and me.
Anyway, we're there. It's always game day in Cleveland. We discuss all these things. And by the way, subscribe to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland podcast. Now at 92.3thefan.com on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. It's way more fun to watch it on YouTube. I'll be honest with you. Sponsored locally by Smiley One and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. The big joke behind that. Tom Withers in today for Jeff Phelps is that I probably do that show from like 15 different places. It's like, okay, where are you right now? And I just fire up my computer. I'm at like half the ice rinks in Northeast Ohio. I'm at anyone's given office. I think I did it once. I was waiting for a doctor, and I think I did it from the doctor's office at one point. I just kind of walked back in the back corner. They're like, who's that guy talking real loud about the Browns? And they're like, maybe I should leave, Daryl.
Me and Daryl.
Me and Daryl. Maybe that should be the new name of the show. Me and Daryl.
Kind of like it.
Talking Browns. Me and Daryl. All right. You know,
Tyrese Haliburton. Let's talk about him for a second.
What do you think? In one way, I'm motivated for him because, again, it was a smidgeon of a report, 13% or 13 votes, that said he was the most overrated player in the NBA, enough to motivate any fan that saw the headline to throw it back at him. And then you can kind of a little bit understand where his dad was probably disgruntled going into what happened.
Maybe so.
But never should have let what happened happen. No. And now he's got all the pressure. you know, that he put all the pressure on his son. Because his son's got to defend him a little bit there, too. It's your dad,
I thought he handled it really well, to be honest with you. I thought he was very accountable. I thought the way Giannis handled it was very, very well done as well. I don't know what – there had been some reports that other teams had reported him in the past for behavior. Now, we had Gloria James here for years. She never acted like that. She wasn't running on the floor, at least not during his NBA career, confronting anybody. I saw some of that in high school, maybe.
You know, there were a lot of things said about I never had a bad conversation with Gloria.
Oh, I loved her.
I did, too. And by the way, great grandma. Loves her grandkids.
Yeah, she's awesome.
It's just like...
Yeah, she's...
It always bothered me when I would hear stuff. I'm like, can we leave Gloria out of this? Because she really... I mean, that just happens to be his mom. Yes, she was... Like, I remember seeing at her high school games was exuberant about her kid. But we didn't know exactly what LeBron would... We had an idea what LeBron would be, but never thought, you know... Maybe she was a little bit of a helicopter.
Yeah.
A military-style helicopter parent. But
some passion there. That's all right.
You know, after he got to the NBA and it kind of settled in a little bit, I kind of get mad when people... like make fun or say.
Yeah. In terms of Tyrese, I would almost argue he's one of the more underrated superstars in our league. I think he's one of the best playmakers in the game. You heard that stat that Dustin threw out about his double digit assists over the last couple of months. They've got some really interesting pieces, Andy. This is a good team. To me, as I said to Dustin, I think they've been kind of under the radar all year, despite making it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, right? He chronicled how they started out so poorly. I wanted to get into a little bit more with him on Haliburton and his issues early on in the season. It sounded like it was more of a confidence thing and a mental thing because clearly the kid's got all the physical tools. But, you know, terrific player. They've got some wing players that, you know, not everybody in Cleveland may be aware of, you know, in your Nemharts and your Nesmiths and your Mantherin and Obi Top. And they got some guys. I think this is going to be a really interesting series. I think it's going to go six games, maybe seven. I will say that I completely overvalued and overrated the Miami Heat in the first round. And everybody did, though. Yeah, I think they did, too.
So Jeff and I have had this conversation all week, and it's been one of those... If you listen to the show enough, you know that it's one of those things that I get irritated listening to Jeff say some things about it, because I think in some ways when we denigrate Miami for basically quitting in the last two games... And that's what Jeff said. Jeff said, like, you can't take anything from the Miami series because they quit. And I'm like, you know, I understand where you're coming from, and I see what you see on that.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I don't want to take anything away from the Cavs.
No, they play exceptional ball. Yeah,
and I think that sometimes when we look at the opponent and the opponent might be inferior, is that are they truly inferior or is the team I'm rooting for that good? And I don't. It's somewhere in between. I think.
I think it was more to your point is, which is that the Cavs played exceptional ball. I think they were just clicking on all cylinders. They made the Heat quit, right? And I don't think they quit. I mean, at that point you're down 3-0, right? You're gonna play your backups down the stretch, what have you. I just thought the Cavs attacked them from the get go. You know, I will say, Cavs are leading 113-108. With less than a minute to go in game two, if that corner jumper goes and you got a 2-point game,
right?
Who knows where that goes? Now, not to say that the Cavs wouldn't have put them away in five or six games, but it was a definitive and comprehensive sweep, but maybe a little closer than that.
I think the irritating part for me all week was I don't want to feel bad that the Cavs kicked the pace.
No,
you know that's I'm not going to feel bad about that. And by the way, I'm not going to use the fact that if Miami got swept as a deterrent to thinking how good the Cavaliers are. We don't want to give the Cavs credit, and we haven't wanted to give them credit all season.
That is spoken like someone who has seen some NBA postseasons. That's exactly the way to view it, Andy. It's spot on.
Yeah, but I just like, okay, so yes, the Pacers deserve our respect, right? They went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year.
Yeah.
And this should be a good series. But I don't like, why do I have to feel bad about the Cavaliers and what they've accomplished this season, which has been nothing short of spectacular, especially when they move the basketball. And I've said this to Jeff a couple times this week, too.
Yeah.
I get irritated and I get worried if they fall behind and now all of a sudden they don't find the right shot. They take a shot within the first 5-6 seconds of the shot clock or as soon as they get across half court. They miss. They come back down. They give up a three. Then they come back down, do the same thing again, and they miss. Like, that's the part I don't like about the Cavaliers. But they haven't shown that enough times to make me completely worry about it, but I feel like that's their Achilles heel.
No, that's a great point, Andy, and I think that was probably a point of emphasis with Kenny Atkinson and his staff, right? I mean, if you're going to nitpick this Cavs team that won damn near 70, almost 70 games
and
now,
that's
right?
What it is. It's nitpicking,
so,
too.
Yeah, so I think they probably spent the last couple of weeks saying, hey, guys, when we're our best is when we're sharing the ball. When we're our best is when we're connected on defense. When we're our best is when we're coming down and we're looking for, you know, we're making that swing pass as opposed to, you know, forcing up a three or what have you.
I love watching that though when they do it. It's great. Well, no, when they're moving that basketball,
moving the ball. Yeah. I got you. And so, you know, it was hard to like really pick this team apart this year because they played so well. What worries me, and we'll get back to this, is that you know the slow starts this year were problematic, right? And their execution down the stretch in tight games, and obviously they haven't really played in a tight one yet, so that's coming.
All right, and by the way, Indiana, very good in the fourth quarter. I mean, they know how to play, and that's why these fourth quarters are going to be must-see TV. We'll come back. We're going to talk more about the Cavaliers. I do want to talk about the Kentucky Derby. Are you going to watch it this weekend? I mean, really, what do you have to invest? 3 minutes of your life to watch the greatest race on earth? We're going to do that, or 2 minutes, whichever way you want to look at it. Dick Girardi is going to join us from betonline.ag. He's the horse racing analyst. He's next, Baskin and Phelps, with Tom Withers.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, let's get more of the Derby. What are you doing tomorrow? I know a lot of Derby parties are going to happen. And, you know, it's just become so much more interactive over, like, the last decade because you can be at the race without being at the race thanks to so many great outlets that are out there. Like, if you're looking for information, well, betonline.ag, that's the way to go. We bring in their horse racing analyst, Dick Girardi, who is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Hi, Dick. How are you?
I'm doing great. You guys are ready. You give me the call to the post at my old Kentucky home back to back. I mean, you guys are serious about this. Right?
We are serious about it. You know why? Because we're both journalists. And when we see that journalism is the favorite horse in this thing, there were so many jokes that went through my mind. I'm like, wait, you can bet on journalism? Never.
I'm waiting for that call. Journalism at the wire. Journalism prevails. Journalism endures. There's a bunch.
Yeah, maybe this is the beginning of the comeback, guys.
I love it.
We're back. The newspapers are back, and it's huge. And how about this? Not only do we have journalism, we also have publisher in this race. I mean, seriously, what is going on?
Yeah, this is weird. That's it. All right, is journalism the horse to watch in this thing? Or you know, give us some insight, because I got to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about the Kentucky Derby, and most of us, I think, don't know about what we're about to see tomorrow. But we love watching it.
Make us experts.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. Journalism is absolutely the horse to beat. He'll be favored in the race, and he should be favored. He's a terrific horse. He's won his last four races, and you gotta love the name. You absolutely have to love the name. But these last two races in California, I thought were the two best that any horse ran in the lead up to the Kentucky Derby. So, yeah, I am a big fan. I will be betting on him, not just because of the name, but because I really like the horse.
So you've had a couple scratches in the last couple of days, right? Rodriguez yesterday, and I think Grande today. Did they give any reason for that? I know that kind of came out of nowhere.
Right. So Rodriguez yesterday, the trainer said that he just thought the horse wasn't quite right. There was a minor issue, but thought he'd be good for the Preakness in 2 weeks. Grande, there's a little mumbling from the owner. He's not happy. The vet scratched the horse, saying that they just thought there was something a little bit off about him. But the owner seemed to think everything was fine. But you know what? The vets make the call. The last thing, you just don't want any of these animals to get hurt. So they're taking no chances, and I get it. So, yeah. That's what's happened in the last.
And this has happened to report. This has happened to that owner before, hasn't he? He's had a couple of horses at the last minute get scratched.
Yep, he had Uncle Mo, who was going to be the favorite, and
I remember that.
He had Forte, who was going to be the favorite. Uncle Mo, I believe, came out the day before the race, and then Forte was actually scratched the
morning of. Right, I remember that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So you can imagine, and Michael Pauly's kind of a wild man. Anyway, he's a St. John's grad,
yeah.
And he's a huge NIL guy for St. John's basketball, and he made all his money in vitamin water. So he's got an opinion, and he's got money. So he's not thrilled.
And I think, he's 0 for the Derby, right? I mean, he's had some favorites over the years, right?
He is 0 for the Derby. His trainer, who's one of the best to ever do it, Todd Pletcher. The one issue he's had is having trouble winning the Derby. He's won it twice, but he's 2 for 65, so not a great percentage.
All right, obviously the other big story is Bob Baffert's back. Obviously had some issues there for testing positive for a medication that can only be used in training, but not on race day. So he's back after 3 years. What's the buzz on that?
Yeah, I think it's great to have him back. He's the biggest name in the sport, and he had two horses. You mentioned Rodriguez got scratched. He's never got last year's two-year-old champ, Citizen Bull. And it didn't feel like the Triple Crown without Baffert. I mean, he's won more Triple Crown races than anybody. You could have a long debate about what should or did happen with the three-year suspension, but it's kind of irrelevant now. He's back. Only thing I would say is the medication violation was more like a somewhere between jaywalking and a misdemeanor. It wasn't like a performance enhancer. It was not a horse racing version of a felony. But the problem is the headlines say horse tested positive disqualified, and that's all anybody remembers anyway.
Dick, always a big field, sometimes 20 horses. We're down to, 18 now or whatever. How big is post position? I know a lot of people make a lot about it, but it's just getting out of that gate clean, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. A lot of times it's like people talk about it and then something happens that you didn't anticipate. It's really more about what horses are next to you in the gate. Like what kind of running styles do they have? Mm. Are they going to impede you at that point? Now, it's interesting. Baffert has Citizen Bull, who has the one hole, which isn't really great because with all these horses next to you and potentially coming over in front of you, the good news is Citizen Bull is fast. They're going to send him to the lead. So actually the one hole is not terrible to be when they're going to the lead anyway. It's the shortest way around. Look, journalism's in now the 7. He's the 8 horse, but because of Rodriguez scratched, he'll move in a gate. He'll be in the 7 gate, but it'll be number 8. That on paper, that's fine. But, what happens if the horse next to you decides to take a left turn? And that's something you just can't anticipate that.
Dick, this seems like I don't know. I remember when I was a young sportscaster, like the only time we ever could talk about gambling was in the Derby.
Horse races, right?
It was the only time we were ever like, oh, yeah, you can tell them what the odds are. And
March Madness.
And now, March Madness was the other one. But we never really considered that. No one filled.
It wasn't betting. Right.
Yeah, no one thought that was really betting, but deep down, somebody was making money. But it just, when you go back and you look at, I don't know, how many years now have you been able to online bet the Derby and how that, has kind of spread and how, what has that meant for horse racing and what has that meant for, keeping things going in the right direction?
Yeah, it's a great question. So like 90% of all the money bet on horse racing now is bet somewhere other than the racetrack. Either you're betting online or used to be you called in, but now you obviously bet on your phone. There's all these services. I'm working here with betonline.ag, which is one of the great services out there. And one of the cool things about the Derby is that they have all these betting props that everybody's familiar with the Super Bowl. And my particular favorite at BetOnline in this one is over-under margin of victory. Hmm. It's a length and a half. I like the over for a couple of reasons. One, I think journalism is going to win, and if he does win, I think he's going to win big. But the good news is, on that particular bet, if I'm wrong about journalism, any of the other 18 horses wins by more than a length and a half, you still win the bet. And it's basically a 50-50 bet over-under. So that's one of the props, and there's tons of them. One of the fun ones is the winning jockey's last name is going to end with a Z. And you have the Ortiz brothers. You have John Velasquez, Nick Juarez, Brian Hernandez. So you got all kind of possibilities there. But, yeah, prop bets are and everybody understands that. Easier than betting like a trifecta or a superfecta at the track.
So, Dick, we're always looking for horses of value. My lovely wife, Lori, and I try to be amateur handicappers at this. And
yeah, by the way, when I said make me intelligent, I didn't realize how much Tom knew about horse racing. I'm going to go sit in the corner and listen to you guys. Okay.
But she liked Rodriguez. Unfortunately, he's out. But she also liked Burnham Square. And I think that's got something to do with Brian Hernandez, who we watched in that Netflix documentary, who's a real nice story. Just seems like a good kid. I say that now. Good family man, what have you, and a good jockey, obviously. Who else should we look for, you know, beyond journalism, which is the clear favorite? What's that next tier of horses look like?
I'm with your wife on Burnham Square. He's 12-1. He's my double-digit odds horse that I really like. In fact, the bet I like the most is the 8-9 exact of Journalism over Burnham Square. Brian Hernandez is definitely a factor in that. Remember, he won the Oaks and the Derby last year, which it hadn't happened for a while for a jockey. It hadn't happened for a trainer since 1952. Kenny McPeak won him. So, yeah, I think your wife is onto something. I thought of all the workouts, the final workouts, I thought Burnham Squares was the best. And each of his races, he's kind of building up to the Derby, has been better than the previous one. If he can come with one more of those, he's got a real chance. Again, my best play will be 8-9 exacta, which is probably going to pay like $75 for two. And if you start putting some zeros behind that two, you can make some real money.
Can you just kind of tell me about the event too? Because I mean, like, if you've never been there before, what's you know, we talk about going to Super Bowls, and you know, we've been lucky enough here, at least in my lifetime, that I've been to a World Series, and I've never been to a Super Bowl. But you know, we've done the NBA Finals, and we've had some. Like, why is the experience of the Kentucky Derby the experience of the Kentucky Derby?
So it's this great tradition, right? This will be Derby 151. So it's been around forever, right? I mean, not long after the Civil War. I mean, that's when it started. That gives you an indication of how long it's been around. I think it's a rite of spring, right? It's always the first Saturday in May. April, some weather can be nice, not nice. But when you're in May, you're in the spring. So I think it's part of Americana. The scene, there's going to be 100,000 people there today for the Kentucky Oaks, then 150,000 tomorrow. And it's one event, and Super Bowl's like this, but it keeps getting bigger and bigger. Like, they can't put enough stands up that they can fill, that they can't sell the tickets for at Churchill Downs, and they charge exorbitant amounts of money. And look, there's ridiculous amounts of celebrities, people with lots of cash. You look at the airport, which is only a couple of miles from Churchill Downs. There's all these private jets coming from all over the world. People want to be seen. They want to be there. So we're talking money. We're talking celebrity. We're talking substantially rich horse owners with horses that they bought for lots of money. And you only get one shot at the Derby. It's only for three-year-olds. So it's kind of like the 100-meter dash in the Olympics. Something goes wrong, you could be eliminated after planning for months and months. So, yeah, if you get a chance to go, it's definitely worth being there for sure.
For a long time, Dick, we used to bet OTB in New York. And I remember my brother-in-law used to tell me, before I would go on Derby Day, he'd give me $10 and say, bet it on the longest shot in the field. And I remember one year, it was a horse, I believe his name was Lil E.T., went off at like 150-1. Anyway, he cleaned up. So if you had to pick the one long shot that you think has a real legitimate shot, if you will, tomorrow, who is it?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the three horse Final Gambit. He's 30-1 on the line. He's trained by Brad Cox, who's one of the best there is. But he's never run on dirt before, right? He's run on turf, similar to Rich Strike, who won the race 3 years ago. Hmm. He's coming from Turfway Park. We'd run on artificial. Well, his race in the Jeff Ruby Stakes was awesome on the 22nd of March. Now, the question is, can he duplicate that form on dirt rather than the artificial track? If he can, then that's probably, to me, that's the livest long shot in a race.
Dick, thank you so much. Thanks for educating us, and we look forward to reading your stuff. BetOnline.ag, you're the horse racing analyst, and right now you're the analyst for this show because I'm definitely smarter about what we're about to watch tomorrow, and maybe I'll go find my way to my website to go find some things that you just told us about. So thank you, Dick.
You got it. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. All right, so Dick Girardi was nice enough to join us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. That it's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads. We got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.